Mr. Roth? We have a Mr. Roth?
Good morning. May it please the court, Robert Roth, Hooper, Lundy, and Bookman for the appellant, Gentiva Healthcare Corp. I have reserved 2 minutes for a rebuttal. The issue in this case is whether the Secretary's final decision properly found that a sustained or high level of payment error determination, which is a prerequisite to the use of sampling and extrapolation, can be made by a Medicare contractor. The answer is an inescapable no. Under the extrapolation limitation statute, 42 U.S.C. 1395 DDD F3, which explicitly and unambiguously states that payment error level determinations must be made by the Secretary, not by a Medicare contractor.
No, it's not what it says.
Your Honor?
You did not quote the statute. You told us.
No, what the statute says, Your Honor, is that with the catch line limitation on use of extrapolation, that a Medicare contractor may not use extrapolation to determine overpayment amounts to be recovered, offset, or otherwise, unless the Secretary determines that there is a sustained or high-level payment error. That's the quote from the statute, Your Honor.
Mm-hmm. But as in the case that immediately preceded this one, there is another statute.
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
But as in the case that immediately preceded this one, there is a second statute that has to be interpreted.
Oh, yes, absolutely, Your Honor. Absolutely, Your Honor. There is a general early case that goes back to the very start of the Medicare program. And what that stands for under the language of that statute is that's an authorization for the Secretary to use contractors and says how they're going to be paid. And what the Congress has done, and there are four examples in the Secretary's brief.
But again, the words of the other statute, it
yes.
doesn't say about paid. It says, with a catch line, functions of Secretary, performance
yes.
directly or by contract.
Correct.
It says the Secretary may perform any of his functions under this subchapter directly or by contract, providing for payment in advance by way of reimbursement.
Correct, Your Honor. Yeah, exactly. It says by contract, providing for. So it has language following the word contract, which establishes how the payments are going to be made. And that's the general authority for the Secretary to enter into contracts. What then follows?
It's not just to enter. It says may perform any of his. It would be one thing if it said the Secretary can enter into contracts.
Right.
That's a different matter. This is perform any of his functions under this subchapter. And the first statute that you cited is a function under the same subchapter, isn't it?
It's absolutely a function in the same subchapter, Your Honor.
So why can't the Secretary perform that function by contract?
Because Congress, Your Honor, in a later and more specific statute, curtailed the authority of the Secretary. Under your interpretation, Your Honor, under the interpretation of the District Court, if that would be true, there would be no reason for there to be any other provisions within the Social Security Act, within Title 18, the Medicare Act, that address contracting authority for the Secretary. But what we find is that there are separate contract, explicit contract authorities for entering into contracts to administer the Part A program, the Part B program, the quality improvement program, and also this program here, the Medicare Integrity Program. And each of those statutes is cited by the Secretary. So in other words, Your Honor, to read KK that broadly.
Say it again, each of those.
Each of those sections, Your Honor, are cited in the Secretary's brief, okay? And so to read KK, 1395 KK, so broadly that even Congress couldn't create an exception to them would be to fly in the face of what has happened here. In other words, what Congress said is, of course the Secretary has this plenary and general authority, but that's not to say that Congress itself couldn't limit that authority.
No, that's a different question than saying they did limit the authority.
Oh, absolutely.
They can limit the authority.
Well, it's more than that, Your Honor. In other words, why would there be a necessity to have a separate provision in 1395KK-1, for example, or 1395U, that says that the secretary can enter into a contract to have people process claims. That would be under, if you read KK so broadly, that would make that statute gratuitous.
If you want to do a Westlaw, you can find that we've referenced Shakespeare for the proposition of making surety surer when we have had that argument made in other contexts.
Or use about another method.
The fact that Congress does something under one statute doesn't mean it didn't also do the same thing under another statute.
Or to use a more homespun metaphor, belts and suspenders.
Well, that could be, Your Honor, except that here there are the time-honored canons of construction of statutory interpretation that say, well, if there's something that's later in time and more specific, then there must be a reason for that. And so it could be a belts and suspenders, but then you would have to read these statutes to be a nullity. And I don't think that the courts, Your Honor.
I think the ancient canon deals with where there's an inconsistency.
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
I think the ancient canon deals with where there's an inconsistency, that the second statute is given primacy. The latter statute, but where you have two statutes doing the same thing, I don't think your ancient canon is applicable.
Well, I think here what we have is a second statute that I believe does conflict and provide more specific guidance to the agency, but it makes perfect sense. In other words, what happened in 2003, Your Honor,
Your argument is that that's the better interpretation, I think you have a good argument. I think your problem lies with Chevron.
My problem, because, Your Honor?
Because the KKA is ambiguous. The two statutes taken together are ambiguous as to the question of whether the Secretary must act directly or can act through contract.
Well, I mean, that's a good question, Your Honor.
If that's ambiguous taken together, then we go to Chevron, where the agency can resolve the ambiguity and need not have the best interpretation, but only a reasonable one.
Well, that's correct.
Is that where we are on this case?
I don't think so, Your Honor, because the case laws that talk about statutory interpretation talk about interpreting the statute here, the extrapolation limitation statute, by itself. And then you can find some ambiguity. Excuse me. You can then look to the legislative history or the context, but you're not going to. But what the district court here has said, well, there's an ambiguity that's now being created by a different statute. Well, we don't concede for a moment that there's a necessary ambiguity here. We have a general authority for rulemaking. Excuse me.
Well, if we look just at this statute,
yes,
and it says, you know, before the contractor can use extrapolation, a determination has to be made by the secretary. I assume that you're not arguing that only the secretary can do that directly, that she couldn't delegate that.
No, we certainly endorse the concept in U.S. Telecom and other cases that the secretary refers to federal employees within when you get to concepts of going without to private parties is where things become different. And that's why the statute becomes important, because there was this grand bargain in 2003. The secretary wanted to have more authority to recover overpayments. Meanwhile, the industry was very concerned that unfettered discretion by these private contractors could be problematic. Why? Mostly because those contractors have an incentive in their contract. They're graded on how they do on recovering overpayments. And so what Congress did is they said, okay, we're going to give the secretary what the secretary wants, but we are going to give you some protection. And the protection is to say that the secretary makes that initial determination. The secretary determines if there's a high level of payment error, or through the secretary or an employee of CMS, but somebody within the governmental function, that this is a core governmental function. And how do we know that? Because there's a provision in 1395DDDF3, Your Honor, that isn't in KK. And that's the judicial and administrative preclusion provision. In other words, Congress went as far as to say in 1395DDDF3 that these determinations, these payment error rate determinations, would be protected from administrative and judicial review. It is simply unprecedented, as we argued in our briefs before the district court, in our oral argument before the district court, and in our briefs here, to have a private entity's actions precluded from court review, from your being able to review the decision that's made that's so crucial. And what makes it crucial? Here, Your Honor, there was a payment error rate determination of 58%. And that was a basis of an overpayment determination where sampling was used. 30 claims were evaluated, and a determination was made of a $4 million overpayment on the basis of 30 claims. The contractor said that there was an 87% error rate. That was wrong. Through the appeals process, Gentiva established that, in fact, the contractor mistakenly adjudicated 80% of these claims. So the point is to say that if that had been done correctly, they were obviously using a wrong standard and presumably used the wrong standard when they made their error rate determination.
What was the appeals process?
Excuse me?
So there was an appeals process.
Yes.
There was an appeals process as to the overpayment,
right, so that,
but not as to the underlying error rate determination.
But that's a way to make a check on the on the error rate.
Absolutely not, Your Honor. Absolutely
not. Apparently
it
helped.
That's a
check on the amount of the overpayment, but the point, Your Honor, is that sampling would not have been able to have been used in the first instance.
I understand that.
That's the protection.
That's one possible protection, but another protection is you have an administrative review of the amount you're going to have to pay in the end, and you utilize that. So it's not as if this is completely delegated to a private party to decide without any kind of review.
Well, that's Your Honor, if you conclude that Congress here, especially in that administrative and judicial review preclusion provision, said, hey, look, it's okay to go ahead and make a $4 million overpayment determination on the basis of 30 claims without any involvement by the Secretary at all. The point, Your Honor, is you say, well, that's okay because they could challenge that overpayment determination
from the Secretary.
Well, there's no delegation on the Secretary in this record. There was a mention, the regulation says by the Secretary, the regulation parrots the statute. There's no delegation language, Your Honor.
Sure.
That's a different argument that I don't understand you to have made before. Your argument seemed to be before that the Secretary can't delegate. Now you seem to be saying the Secretary didn't delegate.
Well, the Secretary didn't delegate, and the Secretary on
is
this
that
statute,
a new argument that you than the one you originally made?
Well, I don't know that it's new. I think they're both in our briefs. The Secretary didn't do it, and the Secretary could not do it under this statute. Now, of course, there's questions about whether the Secretary can do things to delegate some of this authority here, but the statute here is a preclusion, and the judicial review and administrative review preclusion confirms that. And the fact, Your Honor, that there can be a review of the ultimate overpayment calculation doesn't take away the prejudice that happens to providers by having to be that have to go through.
I might have understood the issue you're raising better if your statement of the issue had been less than 3 pages long. But I'm not. Is this the way you argued it in your brief that they didn't delegate or that they can't delegate?
We argued that they cannot delegate. We had a footnote in our briefs that said that we didn't preclude the possibility that the Secretary could enter into some kind of a rulemaking process here and provide for some level of involvement by a contractor. But then we made clear in that footnote, I believe, Your Honor, that case isn't before it.
Well, if you want to rely on that, why don't you put it up where our eyes are?
I'm sorry?
Why would you put it in footnote if you're relying on that? Why don't you put it up where our eyes are?
Well,
it seems to be of marginal importance if you stuck it in a footnote.
The reason that we put in the footnote, Your Honor, is because it's not what happened in this case. It's not in this case. There was no delegation. There was no finding of delegation by the district court. And in fact, in the final decision of the Secretary, and in this argument before this court, the Secretary relies on only two things: the final decision here, and the fact that there's a manual provision that provides procedures, not substance, but the procedures for making these overpayment determinations through extrapolation.
Okay, thank you. We'll hear from the HHS.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. As the Court is aware, there's a general statutory authorization for the Secretary to perform her tasks by contract if she deems that necessary. As the Court has noted, there's no particular reason to believe that Section 1395DDD F3 impliedly precluded that. And I should actually point out, to the extent that my
friend... Why would there have been the separate use of the terms contractor and secretary in that statute if both of them could be done by a contractor?
I think there are two reasons for that, Your Honor. The first is by using the word secretary there, Congress then leaves open that the secretary could do it herself, could do it with her line-level staff, or could do it by contract, as, of course, Section KKA generally allows for. The fact that the word contractor is used elsewhere throughout the section is because of what that section does. The Medicare Integrity Program was set up actually initially requiring that contractors were used for a variety of these sorts of evaluative functions. So in other words, a whole lot of things initially had to be done by contractor, but it doesn't follow that everything has to be done. Everything that doesn't specifically say contractor has to be done by the secretary.
What do you say to their argument that there are separate provisions in Part A and Part B regarding permitting contractors?
So to some extent, that's actually just re-arguing this court's decision in National Association of Home Health. But I do have three specific responses to that. The first is actually, if you look at some of those sections that give specific authorization to a contractor, it's not authorization, but it's actually a mandate. So for example, 1395H says the secretary shall do certain things through contract, whereas KKA simply says that she may do certain things through contract. So there's actually no possible surplusage there. I should also add that in various portions of the statute where there are specific references to contractors, such as the portion we're looking at here that sets up the Medicare Integrity Program, it then spells out specific functions and specific tasks for those specific contractors. So it kind of makes sense that at the top of a section where you're talking about how contractors will operate, you point out what specific contractor it is that you're referring to. And third and finally, Judge Garland, as you pointed out, of course, there is just a belt and suspenders argument to be made here. Unless the court has any other questions, we're happy to rest on our briefs.
I really do, because I find this syntactically a little strange. There doesn't seem to be much reason to structure the sentence this way if, in fact, a contractor could do all of it, the same contractor.
Right.
So I get your argument that maybe they wanted the secretary to have the option of delegating who would make that initial determination, but it doesn't seem to me to make sense to say that that could be the same person. I mean, why would you write it that way? You could just say the contractor.
Well, of course, Your Honor, the plaintiffs obviously haven't made this argument, and to the extent that it seems like what you're pointing out is that maybe some of plaintiffs' policy concerns might be addressed if one contractor made the initial determination and then a second contractor made the later determination. Obviously, the statutory text doesn't say that either. And by delegating it to the secretary, if you look at the language of KKA where it says the secretary can do things by contract as she may deem necessary, it leaves it to the secretary to figure out how to do that. And so she could choose to give it to two different contractors. She could give it to the same contractor and engage in various levels of oversight. Obviously, at the podium now, plaintiffs are suggesting the possibility of some kind of a regulation giving it to contractors. Obviously, the secretary could choose to do it that way. And I should point out, by the way, Your Honor, that obviously a lot of this doesn't come out in the brief because it's not particularly necessary to this case, but there are many different kinds of contractors that have sort of slightly different tasks and functions that are covered by this section. And in fact, right now, some of those contractors never use sampling or extrapolation. Some of them do sometimes, some of them do somewhat more often. And a lot of that is actually driven by the direction of the secretary. So, Your Honor, conceitedly, perhaps there were clearer ways to write this, but obviously throughout the Medicare statute, when Congress says the secretary, what it means is the secretary can do it as directly through her staff or by contract as she may deem necessary. And I think that's the sort of flexibility that the statute allows for.
What's in the manual and what is the import of the manual about setting guidance for how extrapolations can be used?
I apologize, Your Honor. There are kind of two different parts of the answer to that question.
You don't have to apologize. I've asked a compound question.
I was just apologizing for the possible length of the answer that I'll give.
I have 5 minutes and not 8 seconds, so.
I'll try not to use it, Your Honor. The short version is that this is the Medicare manual contains details about a variety of functions that are performed by contractors in a variety of situations. What the manual does is it lays out certain factors that a contractor should look to when it's making that initial determination of whether there's a sustained or high level of overpayment. And then the manual actually in some detail lays out various statistical methods that can be used to actually perform the sampling and the extrapolation. And I should note, by the way, Your Honor, that to the extent that the plaintiffs here seem essentially somewhat unhappy with the fact that a sample of 30 was ultimately used to reach the overpayment amount that was assessed. Really, that's just a challenge to the sampling method. That is a challenge that they are certainly free to raise. In fact, they raised it before the ALJ. They lost. They didn't renew it before the MAC. They haven't renewed it here. So essentially what their argument seems to just boil down to is that if the secretary was going to assess this overpayment amount, she just needs to have done it using a different method. And I should point out, by the
I'm not following that exactly. Why isn't that precluded by the preclusion of administrative review?
So the preclusion of administrative review doesn't allow you to challenge the finding of a sustained or high level of overpayment. But once that finding has been made and sampling and extrapolation occurs, you can challenge the method of sampling and extrapolation. So, for example, if you think that, you know,
the individual damages in a particular case.
That's correct. That's correct. Exactly. So if they think that, you know, a larger sample should have been drawn or a differently stratified sample should have been drawn, they're free to raise that argument.
All this really is an approval of a screening mechanism, and then once the decision to use the method of extrapolation is decided on, then there is a administrative review of whether it's good or bad.
That's exactly right. And just to make sure that I'm not being unclear, there's administrative review of the method itself, the way that sampling and extrapolation was done. There's also administrative review, as happened extensively in this case, of the particular samples that have been drawn. And I should point out, with regard to just the sort of overall approach that a contractor is taking, obviously a contractor, if it's not using sampling extrapolation, could review all of the claims, could review some of the claims, could target claims that are coming from, you know, for example, a particular doctor who's been known to be engaging in overpayments. And I think that the plaintiff would be hard-pressed to say that they could somehow challenge that. I mean, essentially, those are all just sort of initial methodological questions, but the actual steps that lead to the actual overpayment amount are all reviewable.
Okay. Further questions? Okay, thank you. Any time left for rebuttal? All right. Well, unfortunately, unlike the last case where the previous counsel was able to give you some time, there's no time left, but I'll give you an extra 2 minutes anyway.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Sorry.
Okay. The government makes reference to 1395U. The administration of this part shall be conducted through contract, shall be conducted. They still entered into rulemaking to make that happen. But 1395KK-1, that they also make reference to, says authority to enter into contracts. The secretary may enter into contracts with any eligible entity to serve as a Medicare administrative contract. So although one of these may have been some kind of mandatory distinction, that doesn't apply to the others, and we'll call the attention to the court to 1395W-3, paren B, paren 9, which we did not address in our papers, and it's not in the government's papers for more of that discretionary language. You're right, Your Honor, it's a screening process. But the screening process is what we're talking about here, that turned a 30 claim, some unknown sample with a 58% error rate, into a 30-claim, $4 million process that then resulted and forced this provider to go through all these different layers of administrative review. That's the prejudice, is the use of sampling. If they had gone by claim, we wouldn't have had a problem here, because we wouldn't have had a $4 million problem. We would have had whatever it was here, a $16,000 claim problem for the six claims that are at issue here. That's what Congress did. Congress said, look, these contractors have various incentives. Some of them have to, but they're all evaluated on how they perform with respect to overpayments. So Secretary, we need your oversight on this initial determination to use this very powerful tool, a powerful tool that results in only 30 claims for $2 million, and for $4 million. And that's why, Judge Brown, it's so important that it not be by the same person. And that's the point that we were making in our footnote, Judge Sentell. If the Secretary wants to enter some kind of a rulemaking and say, you know what, you do it this way, we'll put these protections in place, that's fine. And what, and Your Honor, what Judge Garland, what Judge Boasberg said below, and it's in his opinion, is that this manual that you make reference to provided only procedures. That's the problem. There's no substance. There's no criteria about what it means to have a sustained or high payment error rate. The Secretary has not provided those standards. This is a small little case, Your Honor. It's one provision, and all we're saying is that for this core governmental function about when extrapolation could be used, Congress made clear that it was the secretary who needed to be involved with that, and that it could not be delegated in its entirety to a contractor, particularly the same contractor who's responsible for making the overpayment recovery.
Thank you. We'll take the matter under consideration. We'll take a brief recess while council changes places.